You're listening to a 3CR podcast recorded in the 3CR Community Radio Studio in Melbourne, Australia. If you like what you hear, please consider donating or subscribing so we can keep bringing you more independent community content. For more information, go to 3cr.org.au.
Hi, I'm Kim Salmon. I'd like to have a quick word about public radio, particularly 3CR. The thing about public radio is that it's more open than the more formatted types of radio to what's going on around it. So when you listen to it, you're more likely to hear a reflection of real life. And 3CR, being in the heart of Smith Street, Collingwood, is a particularly good example of what I'm talking about. If you'd like to subscribe, the number is 94198377.
You've been listening to the same.
After your first day of cycling, one dream is inevitable. A memory of motion lingers in the muscles of your legs, and round they seem to go. You ride through dreamland on wonderful dream bicycles that change and grow. And that's from Mr. H.G. Wells. And this is from Mr. David Byrne.
But we don't know where we've been, and we know what we're knowing, but we can't say what we've seen, and we're not little children, and we know what we want, and the future is certain. Give us time to work it out.
Let's try and work it out. Here we are on the Yarrabug radio show on Radical Radio 3CR, podcasting, streaming, or listening on that old AWA transistor in the kitchen. We've got a big show coming up today. We're actually going to... Can we go from one infection to another, or do we... Sorry, I'm going to make awful puns about this. We've got a good show this morning coming in. Good morning, Faith.
Good morning, Val.
And our special guest today, good morning, Melanie.
Good morning, Val.
There we go. Now I've settled down and relaxed. Everything is okay. You can't hear anything? Sorry, Faith.
That's better. Yeah.
Okay. I'm a little bit rusty with the panel today. But look, we're going to have a good show, touch on a bit of news. But we're going to lovely look at actually... The road of infection from Adelaide to Melbourne, which is, it's one hell of a ride, I would imagine, and a great learnings along the way. But first off, let's get a little bit personal, and let's, Faith, have you got a bike moment to share with us?
I do. There was one day last week, I think there was a couple of days where we set off in the morning in... pea soup fog in chilly conditions. And I then found I was riding up the Merri Creek with some of the Wheel Sisters. So set out in that thick, really cold fog. Uh-huh. And then by lunchtime, we were all riding along in brilliant sunshine.
And the wonder part about that is it starts off that, but you know by 11:30. The skies will be clear, don't you?
Yeah. That sort of weather. As soon as the sun gets up a bit and starts burning through it.
Yeah. I probably don't like admitting this at some stage. I did up a Melanie. I've got a project over the last 25 years of doing up old bicycles, mostly for my own for me to ride. And I've got a lovely example of old English small wheel history. I mean, it's only from the 70s. Faith, you've seen it, the little brown rally 20. Mm. And I built this thing last year, actually remodeled it, polished it, and said to myself, this is the last thing I'm ever going to do this. I'm just going to ride and enjoy them. I can't worry about anything else. reminds me, actually, which we're going to talk about later. Eddie Merckx's wife once said that she thought he'd been inoculated with a bicycle spoke at an early age, and that was his addiction to cycling. Anyway, Faith, you couldn't believe this. A little rally 20 came in, and it's about Prince Purple as the colour.
Oh, nice.
And it's completely in original condition. Obviously sat inside somewhere. I mean, it's a little bit, you know, thing. And it's got one of those really quite rare three-speed with a dynamo hub on the rear. The front light works. I mean, this bike was built in 1973, I think.
Wow.
And the front light is still working. So, unfortunately, I've fallen into the trap of redoing another bicycle.
You've fallen into the trap and you've fallen in love.
Well, I'm beginning to realise it's actually probably it drags you to it first. Mm. I think the love bit comes afterwards.
It chooses you.
Yeah. It looked at me and said...
The mistake you made was thinking it was your choice.
Yeah. Well, only a dog. I already understand that bit. Oh, Melanie, you got something to share with us?
I have. I had lots of fun with animals on this trip that I hadn't really thought about before I left. And I do recall riding out in some farmlands, and of course the farmers aren't going to be happy hearing this, but I did have some lovely rides along dirt tracks with foxes running next to me on the other side of that farmyard fence. I think they were actually probably, they were trying to run away from me. But I enjoyed those moments very much.
Lovely, nothing like a bit of interaction with the wildlife.
Yes. With feral animals, yes.
But they're so cute.
They are, from a distance.
Yeah. Look, we're going to have a little bit of news. Faith, you've got one thing?
Yeah. Sorry. Well, and it probably ties in quite well to yours. So on the weekend, Bicycle Network launched their 5% funding for strategic cycling corridors campaign. Uh-huh. And this is a campaign that is being run in collaboration with over 30 and rising community groups across Victoria who are interested in safer active transport, Bugs, Streets Alive, different climate action groups with an interest in sustainable transport. And it's calling on the Victorian government to dedicate 5% of the transport budget to building the strategic cycling network, over and above anything they're currently spending. At the moment, we get some opportunistic building and developing of corridors together with big build projects, and then through a whole series of grants or minor streams of funding, there's occasional other bits done. I think the total in the brand new budget for strategic cycling corridors is $3.5 million.
Yep.
Which is not going to do much. No. And we need a dedicated budget to make sure strategic cycling corridors can be built and work as a network within any reasonable time frame. So what you can do, we'll put a link in the podcast, but if you go to the Bicycle Network website, you'll see there... you can click on strategic cycling corridors. It'll take you to a landing page where you can read more about the campaign. You can enter your address and it will take you to your local electorate and show you what strategic cycling corridors have been mapped out within that electorate. And it will also give you a bit of an indication as to how much of them have been built or developed. And there's also a handy little button you can press to send an email to your local MP asking them to advocate and support for 5% of the transport budget to be dedicated to building strategic cycling corridors.
When did this start?
Well, it's been going on for months, but it was launched yesterday.
And that's a collaboration with all the groups, yes.
Yeah. So all the Bugs and other active transport groups have regular meetings at Bicycle Network once a month. That's been going on for the last 2 to 3 years since Alison McCormack came on as CEO. And out of that, you know, they're we're sharing information and resources, but also working out what are the things we need to work on together.
Yeah.
You know, we have our local issues, but there are some things that affect us all,
yeah.
And this is one of them.
And just to piggyback on that, if you want to pricey about that spending on actually the active transport budget, on actually what's been promised, there's a very good long read on the ABC's webpage, which actually reads like a guest list of Yarrabug radio show guests from Elliot Fishman to the La Trobe group. And it's a really good summary of where that position is. It's very much worth a read, and I'll try and get a link up to it on the webpage, on the podcast, I should say.
Yeah, it's written by Rhiannon Stevens. It's the headline is The Long Road to a Bike-Friendly Australia, and it's up at abc.net.au if yep. you want to have a look. It's in their long read section and a really comprehensive roundup of all the issues that come in the way of actually building networks when, you know, the policies are in place, everyone says they want to do them, but somehow at the last hurdle, everyone's knees buckle.
No, and we end up with things like Elizabeth Street, which is one of the cycling strategic corridors to begin with. Anyway, look, we're going to be back just after this break to talk to Melanie about her ride.
Yarrabug would like to thank Bicycle Network for their financial support. Bicycle Network, a not-for-profit with 45,000 members, working to get more people riding for their health and well-being. Bicycle Network is proud to sponsor the Yarrabug program and support its important advocacy for safer and more accessible riding. By becoming a Bicycle Network member and or participating in one of their iconic riding events, you're supporting Bicycle Network's Ride to School programs and advocacy campaigns to make it easier for everyone to ride a bike every day. Visit bicyclenetwork.com.au for more information.
And you're back listening to the Yarrabug Radio Show and with our guest today, Melanie Brown.
Hello.
Of the It's Infectious Instagram account, an account that's documenting her ride from Adelaide to Sydney, visiting one of my favourite things, visiting cemeteries and investigating the stories around all the infectious diseases we no longer suffer from.
That is exactly right, Faith. I'm a registered nurse and I've been working in public health in immunisation for the last 15 years. And I'm not sure if you're aware, but immunisation rates have been dropping slightly, which increases the risk for outbreaks, which we're having at the moment with diphtheria. You might have seen there's been quite a lot on the news about it. And I would just spend a lot of time thinking, how can we get more people vaccinated? And not just vaccinated, I would love people to want to get vaccinated, to, you know, have a deep understanding or a deeper understanding of why it is so important. And I was tossing and turning in bed one night and I just thought to myself, what can we do differently, or what can I do differently? And I thought, right, what I can do is quit my job and
go for a bike ride.
Just to maybe bridge that disconnect between the understanding of the disease and the need for vaccination. And what better way to do that than go to the gravesites of people who've died of these infectious diseases as a reminder of how serious they actually are.
And it's interesting, that reminder, because we have lost that social memory. I mean, I remember as a child there were still people walking around in calipers, and there were entire schools on St Kilda Road for deaf and blind children, often due to rubella. But we've now had really effective vaccinations for so long that we don't see the evidence of those vaccinations working.
That's exactly right, Faith. You know, public health is always the career path that you don't see the results, because the result is working. A healthy community.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's working. And we just don't see those diseases in the community anymore. I have had a few people who've, well, one person in particular who gave me some support for this trip, because he has friends who are suffering, still feeling the effects of polio, and you can get a secondary polio condition of, you know, weakened muscles and difficulties with your joints that happens like 30 years later. And the same sort of things can happen with measles. There's lots of complications that can happen further down the track. So some people still, you know, recognize those, but in the main, we just don't see these infectious diseases.
Mm-hmm. Can I ask, what was the oldest one you discovered along the way?
Oh, you're putting me on the spot. Oh,
I'm just thinking it's...
Yeah.
Because that road must have had a lot of traffic over the years, especially during the gold rush times.
Yes. Well, I think, I'm going to see one in Melbourne this afternoon at your central, Melbourne Central Cemetery. A footballer, in fact. He was a footballer for Carlton. He died at 27 years old in 1883 of tuberculosis. So I think I've had some a bit earlier than that. But I've been able to find the cemeteries and the grave sites looking at Trove, our historical resource of all the newspapers. So to identify these grave spots, there had to be some information in Trove and information in another fantastic website. Doesn't sound professional, but it's fantastic. It's called Find a Grave.
Yeah.
And it's got all your grave sites, your cemeteries and grave sites all over the world. It's just this amazing resource. So I could match those two and then find them. But I think I had one in the 1860s, and I think that was sort of my earliest, and that was probably diphtheria.
Yeah.
And tuberculosis is a great example, because we often think, well, these diseases impact babies, children, or the elderly. But tuberculosis it hit young, strong people. Like if I go back through my family tree, that period, 1890s, you know, it's 16 to 25-year-olds who were healthy, fit, and then suddenly gone.
That's right. And there are some amazing photos of people actually in, I was looking at some Melbourne photos, people on the verandas in beds recuperating, and it was just rows of young men. Not sure where the women were, but it was rows of young men who were recuperating from tuberculosis.
That H.G. Wells, three of the people in H.G. Wells' immediate family at the end of the 1800s all died of TB, and he had a touch of it. It was really, we can be a bit lighthearted about this, but it really was a killer. And right up until, remember the ads they used to have on the old trains or the trams? You know, they used to have the mobile X-ray clinics that used to go around Melbourne.
Yes.
You know, get a free chest X-ray.
Yes.
And there was a real fight for it.
Yeah. And people would line up to get vaccinated because they could see the disaster that was occurring all around them with their family and their communities and people they loved. And so there were queues of people wanting to get the vaccine.
Yeah.
Very different to nowadays.
When did the TB, no, oh, is it right? What's his name? Who?
The BCG vaccine?
No, for, I'm trying to remember whether it was TB, for polio. What was his name? Sarin? No. The first.
I don't know, I'm afraid.
It was a liquid.
The oral drops.
The oral. So when the vaccine for polio changed from, you know, a completely different regime to just an oral thing, it changed completely as well.
Yes. First of all, you had the oral drops, and then depending on the prevalence of the disease in the community, that would then change to the intramuscular injection. Those things had to do with risk versus benefit, and as the amount of polio decreased, it was time to move on to the injection type of the polio vaccine.
And in terms of the ride, what's been the most memorable moments for you? Is this your first big bikepacking trip?
Or? It is my first big bikepacking trip. My longest ride in Adelaide to start with was probably up to my 88-year-old mother's, which was 12 kilometres. And I was pretty excited about going to and from there. My biggest day on this trip, I think, has been 93 kilometres. So what was your question, Faye?
Memorable
moment.
Memorable, yeah. Cutest cemetery, best bouquet on active gravestone.
There have been some very interesting cemeteries. The one at Dartmoor, just sort of across the border in southwestern Victoria, really stood out to me because it is what I would call a brutalist cemetery. I've never seen anything like it before. They obviously just had the one grave maker there.
Oh.
So they were all in the same style. Oh. They were all these sort of very, of course, rectangular, heavy, dark cement or dark stone grave sites. Yeah. Yes, it was very interesting. I've never seen anything like it.
So there's a whole story there as well.
Yes, that's right. The architecture of these grave sites. Very interesting. And actually, just reminded me, as I was coming into Bacchus Marsh, going through Maddingsley, I just went past a cemetery by chance, and it was time for lunch. So I thought, well, what better place for lunch than the cemetery? And in I went, and there were lots of people from, I think it was Samoa or those islander groups of people. And so many of the grave sites had stools and benches, sets of chairs where people were sitting.
Yeah.
Having a picnic with their family, with their deceased family member.
Yeah.
And I know that's a thing that was common in the past, but I hadn't realised it was still occurring today in different cultures. Cool. So that was a real highlight for me, actually. I really loved that.
Yeah. You do see a bit of that up in Faulkner and the Northern Cemetery.
Right.
But, yeah, different cultural groups still.
It makes sense.
Yeah, yeah.
How lovely.
And that's what ancestor worship's all about, isn't it?
That's true.
Make sure that those who go before you are sent off.
No.
What is there a more common disease in amongst the gravestones? Whooping cough, that you highlight a little bit.
Yeah, look, whooping cough for sure, because, you know, your younger group, your infants were so susceptible to those diseases spread by the respiratory droplets.
My mother still talks about when the four of us as really young kids all had it at the same time. It's seared into her brain, the sound. She said, like, she's obviously traumatized by it. But that was before the vaccine. Yeah.
Yes.
And it's still around.
It is still around, and we do have outbreaks, and those children, babies, sometimes who are too young to yet get vaccinated.
And that's the other thing. It's not just to protect you. It's to – there are some vaccines that, you know, babies can't have, so everyone else in the community has them to protect.
That's right, and that's called cocooning. So – the more we're vaccinated as adults, the more we're protecting those people who are at risk or vulnerable or are not yet of age to be vaccinated.
Uh-huh. Yep.
The thing that was most common out in the country was diphtheria, and that would really sweep through communities. And it, you know, it was very difficult to contain. I went to a gravesite in Hamilton that had a it was a reverend who died, and the story was that he had taken out a party on Easter Monday. A whole lot of children, families. About 6 days later, he had a sore throat. And a few days after that, he was most unwell. Four of the children who were on that picnic were in hospital. Another seven were being nursed at home. A few days later after that, he was dead. And I'm not sure about, you know, what happened to all the other children, but I'm sure it wasn't a great outcome.
No.
So that just shows you how infectious these diseases are.
Yeah.
These kids were outdoors playing.
Yeah.
And
and with no symptoms.
That's right. Yeah. And someone was in there who was still a bit infectious.
Was there a prize for the best kept cemetery?
One of the cemeteries that was very well kept was Tailem Bend in South Australia. And that had a note, a sign at the gate that it was kept up by Rotary.
Yeah.
It was very neat. Actually, it was almost a bit too neat. But it was beautiful. There was a lot of love there and, you know, seats under huge pine trees. Lovely place.
It's interesting, in all those cities, in all those little towns, the other memorial monument will be the monument to the Great War, the First War, which will be in the city, and they always get looked after. You know, well, because they're visited and used once a year for Anzac Day. But it's interesting, those two things go together as far as that time frame then, don't they?
That is very true. You know, you do, of course, have all those military grave sites. I'm not sure what they're actually called.
Yeah.
Yes, they do. But, you know, as the relatives die off and there's no relation to the current times in some of these cemeteries, they do sometimes get left a bit by the wayside.
Mm.
Yeah.
And they're just such a font of knowledge because people would write a bit more information in olden days about what happened with the family or, you know, who their relatives were or what they died of.
Yeah.
I love, like, accidental drownings.
Yes.
Snake bites.
That's
a stronger word than I should use.
It's not a cemetery, I think, but they're full of plaques in – I'm pretty sure it's in London, of people who died trying to save somebody else. So
I don't know about this
whole collection of names of, say, somebody who dived into the river to save somebody then died themselves.
Right.
And that's virtually a wailing wall. So you can see how some of those things can get used over and over and over again.
Mm.
There's a lovely gravestone in the Kew Cemetery with this bloke's lovely homage to his wife. I can't remember anything of it,
beautiful.
But it's really quite a stunning piece of work.
It is, and she was one of the most prolific women cyclists who took up cycling in the 1890s and then died in childbirth. We won't have time to go into that now, but she was a very well-known cyclist in Melbourne at the time. If people want to follow the rest of your journey, because you still have to get to Sydney...
I do, yes.
They can find you on Instagram at It's Infectious.
That's right. Just plain old It's Infectious, one word, no apostrophe S, no grammar needed here.
You're very modern.
And I guess you're going to be trying to avoid the Alps during winter?
Yes, I'm probably going up to Echuca and then sort of west.
Oh, right.
I haven't exactly worked out my route yet. I'm having a little bit of a rest here in Melbourne to start with, catching up with my family.
Yep, awesome. Well, thanks for coming in and sharing those stories with us.
Yeah.
And we look forward to seeing how the rest of the trip goes and what the other stories you unearth along the way about vaccinations and infectious diseases.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me on your show. It's been great.
It's a pleasure.
Thanks, guys.
The other thing is Friday, this coming in Friday, last
critical
Friday
mass.
Of the month, critical mass.
All the lights, bring all your lights.
Bring all the lights, bring whistles, bring as much noise as you can. That's up for this week. Next week it will be Chris and Steve. And next up is Lost in Science.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast. If you found it valuable, please consider donating or subscribing to support independent community radio. To find out more, go to 3cr.org.au.